From Decatur to Dunwoody, from Tucker to Toco Hills, from Chamblee to Stone Mountain, this is the voice of commerce in DeKalb County. Now, broadcasting from the Business Radio X studio in downtown Decatur, this is DeKalb Business Today.
And welcome in to another edition of DeKalb Business Today on DeKalb Business Radio. This is the Power Lunch edition. We do it once a month just to recognize the food and drink industry in and around DeKalb County. My name is Matt Holmes, executive producer Jason Becknell along for the ride. We are glad that you are here with us. We'll introduce you to our panel in just a second, but first want to remind you, we're on social media. Follow us on Twitter at DeKalb Radio X. Like us on Facebook, facebook.com/DeKalb Business Radio X. You can find our podcasts on our website where we're streaming live right now, DeKalb.BusinessRadioX.com, or on iTunes. You download them there for free. Without further ado, let's get to our panel, and we start with Mike Voida. He is the director of the Decatur Barbecue Blues and Bluegrass Festival. About to be a busy time for you, Mike.
It is. We are about 8 days away, and always an exciting time. You know, a lot of work goes into it throughout the year, and it's always great to look at the weather reports, and everything looks good. So we're excited for August 15th.
Things are looking better. We had, I don't know, like 100 straight days of 90-plus degree heat, and finally we're back kind of in the 80s. I don't know if that lasts for you, but how big has weather been in the past for you?
You know, it's, as we like to say, a summer tradition. It's summer Decatur in August. It's always been an August event, and we've had, you know, we certainly we do some things to make sure it's as comfortable as possible for folks, but it's an outdoor event, and rain or shine. And it's funny, I looked at the weather report the other day. It's not 100% accurate this far out, but I saw an 8 as the first number, which is always better than a 9.
That's a good thing. And look, if it gets too hot, I'm sure there's some sort of cold beverage that somebody could find to cool themselves down.
Yeah, you know, we've got a great partner in New Belgium beer, and there'll be plenty of ice-cold New Belgium products out there.
So, all right, we'll look forward to finding out more about the Decatur Barbecue Blues and Bluegrass Festival coming up. But our next guest, Austin Phillips, the chef at Shorty's Woodfire in Tucker. You can check them out at shortyspizzaatl.com. Austin, we're glad to have you.
I'm glad to be here.
So delicious pizza. We go from blues and bluegrass to, you go into Shorty's and you're going to look at a menu and it's not, okay, here's the pepperoni pizza and here's the supreme pizza. All the pizzas are named after famous singers, famous bands.
Well, we're passionate about music and we're passionate about pizza, so it makes sense to put them together.
That's cool. So of all the famous names out there, I prefer the Weird Al pizza. What do you like? What's the musician pizza that's your go-to?
Well, my favorite is the Biggie Smalls.
Yeah. And what is that one?
The Biggie Smalls is a six-month-aged sopressata with roasted garlic, roasted onions, and it's topped with prosciutto and arugula.
Okay. That's cool. And so these pizzas don't necessarily have anything to do or a whole lot to do with the singers or the bands themselves, or is there some sort of connection?
Almost nothing.
Well, it's a lot of fun, and we'll look forward to talking to you more about that. Our third guest, Daniel Peach, also a chef, chef de cuisine at Chai Pani here in Decatur, the website chaipanidecatur.com.
Yes, sir.
Glad to have you here.
Good morning. Good to be here.
So from making pizza, and that obviously is a different part of the world from Indian food.
Much different part of the world.
Yeah. How do you get that kind of experience?
Well, we opened in Asheville in 2009, and I started at the beginning, and the owner, Mehran's mom, came from India and taught us a lot of the basics. And then since then, I've been to India 5 times and worked in restaurants and hotels in India, and have really picked up a lot along the way, but really still feel like just scratched the surface even after 6 years now.
When you talk about authentic food, I know that Mexican food is famous. You know, you go to a Mexican restaurant, you're going to have American Mexican food. How authentic is, you know, if you go to Mumbai, are you going to have at Chai Pani what you're going to find in Mumbai?
You will. There are items on our menu that are the exact same as they are in India. And authentic is a word that comes up a lot in our industry. And it's an interesting word because authentic means being true to yourself, right? If you're an authentic person, you're being true to yourself. And who we are as Chai Pani is, Mehran, the owner, grew up in India, but he's lived in U.S. for 22 years in the South. And I, being the chef, I grew up in South Carolina. And our authentic food for us is, you know, what speaks to who we are. And we do dishes that are the exact same as they are in India. We also do dishes that have variants that are based on ingredients we get in the South, and sort of our take and, you know, our take on it, how we feel about life, how we feel about food. And even if you go to India, I mean, you can find club sandwiches on the street in India that are made on white bread with ketchup, and they are authentically Indian, much more so than the rice and curry that you think of, because people eat them every day. So authentic is an interesting word. It's a fun thing to play around with. I feel like we're very authentic to who we are and what we do. So I would say it's very authentic, yes.
All right. You're listening to DeKalb Business Today, the Power Lunch Edition here on DeKalb Business Radio. Mike, let's get back with you. Tell me some of the background. How did the Decatur Barbecue Blues and Bluegrass Festival get started?
Well, it's an interesting story. About 15 years ago, the Decatur Preservation Alliance tried to go and save the old train depot, which is now the Kimball House, and they wanted to move it off of the tracks to save it. So some energetic folks and residents petitioned the city to do an event, and they raised some money and brought in a trailer with some music and threw a party, basically, to start raising some money for that. Over the years, it's moved in 06. We moved it over to the Harmony Park Oakhurst section in the community center of South Decatur. And the Oakhurst Neighborhood Association really became part of the entity that owned and ran the event. I was the former president of the Neighborhood Association, so de facto festival director. And last year we made a shift as well from doing it in the Harmony Park area, which I personally felt was a very disjointed festival area. And we moved it over to the parking lot at 630 East Lake. Bigger stage, a lot more space, more conducive to an actual event, and we've often running. It's been 15 years. I've been involved with it for the last four or five. Live in Oakhurst, so I've been to it for a long time, and really, it's a summer tradition in Decatur. Not many other festivals are going on this time of year. A lot of them are in the spring.
Yeah.
So we have this, you know, this knowledge from folks that the second week in August is always the Barbecue and Blues Festival.
For those who might want to show up, haven't been before, you buy your tickets ahead of time, then you're buying tickets for food and drink, or how does that all work?
Yeah, it's a fundraising event, so that's probably, backtrack a little bit. So the event's purpose and objective is to raise funds for local charities here in Decatur, hence the ticket price. But we feel, you know, we're producing and giving the folks 7 hours of national, regional, and locally acclaimed blues and bluegrass music. And frankly, if you know you went to go to Eddie's Attic or somewhere to watch even one of these bands, it's going to cost you more than $10 to go see it. So there is a ticket price,
And what's that price?
$10.
Oh, okay.
And you can get it at freshticks.com. And the advanced ticket price is $10. So between now and midnight on the 14th, you can get it at $10. If you decide to wait on till Saturday, then it's $20 the day of. And yes, food and drink are all... there are costs to that, but purpose of it is to raise funds, and we feel we put on a really good event, and we feel the price point for the music you're going to see is well below average. So, I'd love for people to get out there and get tickets between now and next Friday, and obviously if they're coming in from outside of Decatur and not familiar with the festival, DecaturBarbecueFestival.com will have all your info.
So that's one of the fun things when you go to a barbecue festival. You want to know what you're going to be able to try. It's cool to get to try different barbecue or different ribs or whatever from different places. Who will you have out there?
Yeah, so we've got three longstanding relationships with some great barbecue restaurants and vendors here in the Atlanta area. Fox Brothers Barbecue, Sweet Auburn Barbecue, and Williamson Brothers Barbecue are our three main barbecue vendors. They'll have a varied menu of kind of all of the basics and all of the things that you would normally find, from ribs and brisket to pork. But they'll also have some interesting menu items. We're certainly understandable for our vegetarian fans out there. So mm-hmm. There are vegetarian options, things like pimento cheese sandwiches and vegetable plates and other things. So just because you may not be a fan of barbecue, we certainly have some other options. And then a myriad of dessert and other vendors that'll come in and really kind of take care of anyone's dietary or palate needs.
It's one of those events that almost kind of sells itself. If you're in that area at all, you're going to smell the barbecue from a long way away. You're going to hear that music from a long way away. It's pretty cool.
Yeah, it's a neighborhood festival. I mean, we certainly draw a lot of people from outside of Decatur, but we like to call it the four B's, you know, barbecue, blues, bluegrass, and beer. So, it's a fun event from 12 to 8 on Saturday, August 15th. And again, 7 hours of really, really good music. I think that's what we really kind of pivoted towards the last 2 or 3 years, is focusing on some really good bands and really good music. And certainly happy to talk more about that. But
Who are people going to see out there?
Yeah, so we've got a really good lineup. Obviously, we try and stay in the blues and bluegrass vein. So starting off at 1 o'clock is the Dappled Grays, popular band here in the Atlanta area. At 2 o'clock following them is Beverly Guitar Watkins, who, if you've never seen or heard of Beverly, she's 75 years old. She plays the guitar behind her head with her teeth. She's really, really great. And it's one of those things you'll never see. And, you know, that's worth the $10 to come and just see Beverly Guitar Watkins play. Got a couple new bands to the festival. Sailing to Denver is a bluegrass band. And another band called Lockdown Blues, which is out of Charlotte. Great lead singer. And then some stalwarts that have come back. Michelle Malone, extremely popular, longtime artist here in the Atlanta area and the Georgia area. And then our headliner, backed by popular demand from 2 years ago, is a really, really great band called Seven Handle Circus. Bunch of young guys from Atlanta, cross between Mumford and Sons and really anyone else. They play covers of 80s bands like A-ha, but like in the bluegrass vein.
That's cool.
And the last time they were here, they actually went and did an impromptu acoustic just performance off stage because everyone just wanted them to play more and more. So really good music. And then one other thing we wanted to mention is the Friday night before, we have a couple bands playing in Oakhurst to kind of just extend the festival a little bit more. We've got a teenage blues band called No Comment that's going to be playing on the porch at the U-Joint. And then the Porch Bottom Boys will be playing at Mojo's. We just try to extend the festival a little bit. You know, folks that are going out to eat Friday night in the Oakhurst section will see us setting up. We'll see signs. We'll see the stage going up. And then wanted to give them some blues and bluegrass on Friday night.
Well, the website is DecaturBBQFestival.com. You get all the details there. You can also follow them on Twitter at DecaturBBQFesti, F-E-S-T-I. Mike Voida, we appreciate you joining us. Circle back with you coming up a little bit later in the show.
Absolutely. Thanks, Matt.
All right, so let's go to Austin Phillips now again, the chef at Shorty's on Lawrenceville Highway in Tucker. We talked a lot about the live music aspect of the Decatur Barbecue Blues and Bluegrass Festival. Live music is something you definitely find at Shorty's.
Yeah, absolutely. You find live music at Shorty's, mostly local talent, you know. We try to bring in bands that are trying to get their foot in the door, you know. We also got some greats. Like, for instance, there's a local legend in Tucker named Swami. He has a radio show that he does on the AM band, I think. Mm-hmm. But he comes in the first and third Thursday of every month, does like an old rock and roll style show, just a singer-songwriter style all by himself. That's fantastic. Another band that we have in all the time would be Midnight Revival, another local legend of Southern Soul in Tucker. Just fantastic music. Yeah.
How long have you been at this?
Myself?
You personally, yeah.
At Shorty's or professionally?
Professionally.
I've been cooking for about 11 years professionally. My father was a chef, you know.
That's funny because when we first went to Shorty's and we first found the place, we've lived in Tucker about 6 years and never thought of trying it because you pass by it on the street and it kind of looks like a barn. It's a very unique place.
Yeah, it's an odd place, but, you know, I mean, we're proud of how odd we are, you know.
Yeah. And so you give the pizza a try. It's wood fire pizza, which you certainly won't find everywhere. Talk about the difference there.
Okay. Well, wood fire pizza is definitely not the easy way to make pizza. I tell every new guy that comes in that you're going to ruin 100 pizzas this year just because it's a skill and it's a craft, you know, to cook something in an ever-evolving oven. Mm-hmm. Right? It's never the same temperature. It's never going to cook exactly the same, and you have to adapt yourself in the middle of a busy dinner rush to being able to craft perfect pizzas all night long. And it's really difficult. You know, but we believe that by doing things the hard way, we're doing it the right way, you know, and that's kind of my philosophy with cooking, you know.
So you run down the street to, you know, pick at Pizza Hut, Domino's, whatever, they're going to put a pizza in an oven and just set a timer for 10 minutes or whatever. Are you having to constantly keep an eye on the pizza or check it, rotate it? What's the process?
Yeah, in any given night or day, I mean, you've got a guy whose dedicated job is to watch the oven.
Right? Really?
So somebody is making a pizza. And I mean, it starts there, you know, if it's not made perfectly before it goes into the oven, by the time it goes in, it could get stuck. There could be a tiny little pinhole that causes the sauce to stick to the surface of the oven. It'll rip an entire pizza in half. When that happens, you know, if you don't completely scrub your oven in the middle of being busy, then the next pizza that goes on top of that spot's going to be ruined too. So it's a high pressure environment in terms of cooking pizza, that's for sure. But I mean, you've had the pizza, and I think that you can agree that it's fantastic.
It's amazing. Do you guys have to like draw straws for who has to be the official pizza watcher? Because that's got to be a hot job.
I love doing that job.
Really?
So that's my favorite job in the restaurant for sure. You know, it's high pressure, and it's you know, I like to be the one that comes out when it's tight.
You know, but you are going to sweat as you're standing there by a wood fire oven in the middle of summertime.
Yeah, it stays around 700 to 900 degrees. So it's definitely pretty warm standing there. I probably lose about 2 pounds a day and sweating alone. But I make up for it in my pizza that I eat.
So I would imagine that the majority of the business you're doing is pizza. I went into your restaurant one time for whatever reason, really not in a pizza mood. The rest of the family got some pizza. I said, I'm going to order off the menu, which really you should never do when you go to a pizza place. But so I get the salmon. And I said, holy crap, this is an actual salmon type dish. It was very, very good. Talk about some of the other stuff you have on the menu.
Well, we don't want to be known solely as a pizza joint. You know, I mean, we make fantastic pizza, and I'm glad that people like it. But what we do is we take this single solitary cooking device that we have in the restaurant, and we use the wood and, you know, like everything about it to create this unique flavor for other foods. I'm doing all kinds of roasted foods. For instance, the salmon that you said, we roasted on a cedar plank. Fire roasted asparagus, garlic, potatoes. It's simple. It's fantastic, you know?
I mean, you've got a lot there insofar as non-pizza elements. One of my favorites, no, my favorite would be the dessert pizzas.
Okay.
You've got a s'mores dessert pizza. I haven't tried the other one because the s'mores one is just so ridiculously good. But talk about the dessert element because that's really cool.
Well, I mean, just about every pizza place has come out with some kind of dessert thing, you know. But the fantastic thing about the s'mores pizza is that it's probably one of the only ones that I know of that's actually cooked on a campfire.
Really?
Yeah, well, I mean, we have a wood fire inside
of the
oven.
Yeah.
So you get that oak smoke taste to it, you know, and it brings you right back to Boy Scouts, I guess.
It's one of those things you have to plan ahead for and make sure you leave room because if you're trying to eat the whole pizza and stuff and then, oh, yeah, I wanted to order dessert, it becomes a problem.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So that's cool. Again, the website is shortyspizzaatl.com. Austin Phillips, the chef at Shorty's Woodfire there on Lawrenceville Highway. Let's talk with Daniel Peach now, chef de cuisine at Chai Pani in Decatur. The website, chaipanidecatur.com. Talk to me about your clientele. I would imagine it's a diverse crowd.
It's very diverse. Being in Decatur, there's an enormous Indian population here. If you've ever been down, you know, DeKalb Industrial or over there, Patel Plaza and Cherian's, you can see. So we have an enormous Indian clientele, and we also have a very big kind of local Decatur young family clientele. And then also on top of that, sort of foodies that come from all over the Atlanta area to check us out.
So I don't know a lot about Indian food. Mm-hmm. I eat Indian food.
Yes, sir.
But so I don't know a lot about it. We go into your restaurant, we order an appetizer, and it comes out, and it's delicious, but it's got, like, cornflakes in it.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is really very interesting. I would not think to put cornflakes.
Cornflakes are very popular in India.
So talk to me a little bit about that.
So, well, where to begin? I mean, India is such an old country. And, I mean, you have a city in India like Varanasi that's been, it's the oldest continuously inhabited place on Earth. If you go there today, it's very similar to the way it was over 2,000 years ago. And India is more religiously diverse than even the U.S. It's very culturally diverse. Every state is different. There's innumerable languages. And what you get from that is a very, very diverse, you know, culinary tradition that goes way back. So what is Indian food is such a difficult question. It's, you know, the owner Marwan uses the analogy a lot that if you were to take a South Indian to a traditional Indian restaurant where they have a tandoor and you get saag paneer and naan and things like that, it'd be the same as taking someone from France to an Italian restaurant and being like, yeah, this is your food, you know, because you're from Europe, right? It's insanely diverse. We specialize in street food, which is called chaat. And the Hindi verb chaatna means anything that makes your tongue tingle, like your tongue tingling. So like if you think of a lemon, if you've ever thought of a lemon and you get that sour feeling in your mouth, that's chaat. And so chaat is any food that just makes the palate like tingle. And most of those things are very light. They're snacks. And you get them on the street, and you generally eat them in the afternoon between 4 and 7, you know, before dinner. And they're snack foods. So you get small portions, and you share them with your friends, usually sitting outside on the back of your motorcycle or something like that. We have that, and then we also do what's called a thali. Thali is the Hindi word that actually literally means plate. And that's a platter where you get all sorts of different curries and rice and breads and can kind of sample a lot of different things. And it's very, very similar to what you would get in an Indian home. So we do that also.
And so I notice on those types of dishes, it also comes with a little dessert.
Always.
I mean, do they present that at dinner?
Yes, sir.
Just like that in India.
Yes, and a lot of time dessert is eaten with the meal. But sweets are also a huge part of just Indian tradition. On your birthday, you would buy sweets and feed them to all your friends. You know, any occasion, you know, you'd buy something sweet. And a lot of my Indian friends don't feel like they've been satisfied after a meal until they've had something sweet. So it's a big part. And a lot of Indian food is based on this ancient medicinal system in India called Ayurveda. And what a big component of that is balance. Everything should be in balance. And so on the typical thali, you need to have something that's salty, you need to have something that's sour, something that's bitter, astringent. You need to have different textures, things that are crunchy, things that are soft. And obviously sweet is a big part of that. And if any one of those is lacking, there's this imbalance. And so a huge part of the plate is just that cohesiveness.
So it seems like you've done plenty of studying on it. Yes. Actual trips to India?
Yeah, I've been to India 5 times, going again on the 25th. The first time I went to India, I stayed for 6 months. I traveled around and worked in all kinds of restaurants and homes, worked with, you know, some of the best cooks in India, which are aunties and grandmas, and working in the homes with them, learning all kinds of magic. And I feel very comfortable in India. I learned Hindi before I went, and I, you know, speak Hindi fluently now. It's very easy to get around, and Indians are very hospitable, especially to foreigners, and it's been very easy for me to go and go to restaurants and just try and hang out and, you know, meet the cooks and cook with them. And have had some really amazing, life-changing opportunities there learning.
Now, I'm bowled over by the food. I know our executive producer, Jason Beck. Now, you were talking earlier about the drink options that you were interested in.
Yeah, I love at Taipei, not just the food, but they have these mixed cocktails that you don't find anywhere else. Mm-hmm. You get with the bartenders a lot. I know you're the chef there, but do the bartenders come up with this?
They do. And actually, I personally don't drink alcohol very much. So I'm not that qualified to really deal with the beverage program. We have an amazing team of bartenders, and they do a really good job coming up with weekly specials. And we even have a pretty extensive bottled cocktail program where we bottle our own cocktails. And they have a wide availability of ingredients that a lot of normal bars don't usually have, because they pull from all sorts of Indian spices and things like that. So they're always coming up with some really cool stuff.
Yeah. Is that authentic to India as well? I know there are a lot of cultures, a lot of religions where alcohol does not play a role at all.
Yeah. I mean, obviously, a lot of people drink in India, and there are some states in India that are dry states. They've, you know, have prohibited alcohol. But in India, I would not say we've traveled a lot in India and even been to pretty fancy places, and a cocktail program, as it were, is not that developed. You know, you're lucky to get sort of just a decent Manhattan or something like that. So that's not a big thing in India. Most Indians just drink beer, scotch, or something simple like that.
Well, I always get one of the large Taj Mahal beers when I go to an Indian restaurant.
Taj Mahal is a very special beer. I'll drink a Taj Mahal.
Yeah, it's very easy.
Yeah,
very
Kingfisher, good. Yeah.
You're listening to DeKalb Business Today, the Power Lunch Edition here on DeKalb Business Radio. My question to both the chefs, as you can explain it to us, because I think we've seen it on TV in the Hell's Kitchen and that sort of thing. We've seen it in some of the movies. What's it like back there when you're in the middle of a lunch rush or a dinner rush on a Friday night and things are just kind of crazy? Is it like you see on TV? You're shouting out orders, you're directing this. It's kind of controlled chaos, Austin?
Well, you know, I mean, it really depends on the kitchen. Not every kitchen's the same. There are kitchens that are like Hell's Kitchen, I guess, with Gordon Ramsay. I mean, mm-hmm. I've worked in those. I've led those. And honestly, to me, leading in that kind of way is disgusting. I like to encourage my cooks. I like to try to promote an environment where they create things on their own, and they're not afraid to make a mistake. If they make a mistake, I make sure that they know that they made a mistake. But it's not, you know, I'm not a demon toward them about mm-hmm. it.
How big a staff do you have?
Right now, I've got 12 people working for me in the kitchen. We have a large staff in our kitchen because we do everything. Fresh, we do everything. We don't even have a freezer. We don't have a microwave. Everything that we do is prepped the day of, and it's an ambitious way to do what we do. And so, like I said, I try to encourage people to create on their own, because I don't want to have to do everything by myself.
Well, and you've also got the unique circumstance where your kitchen is pretty much out there. I mean, the first thing you see when you walk into your restaurant is the oven.
Yeah, it is an open kitchen, and, you know, in a kitchen, meltdowns are pretty well known. People have meltdowns in the middle of a rush. And honestly, in an open kitchen like ours, a meltdown equals immediate termination. Mm-hmm. So we need people that, you know, can keep their cool and cook in a high pressure environment, but still chat with customers and create this environment that is welcoming and fun. You know, that's what we're all about, is this casual environment with above average food.
Now, Daniel, at Chai Pani, I mean, the kitchen is behind closed doors. Is it just going crazy back there? Are you berating people?
No, I'm kind of a softie, to be honest. And we have a general philosophy about, you know, who we hire. We hire much more based on someone's culture than their skill level. Because if you don't know how to dice an onion, for instance, you can learn relatively quickly. But if you're just inherently like a depressed or pessimistic or negative person, it could take lifetimes to change that. So we really try and nip a lot of kitchen aggression in the bud by hiring well. Kitchens, like Austin said, a lot of them are like really just not fun places to be in. They're hot and they're busy and, you know, people get upset. And it doesn't create an environment that's conducive to tasty food, I don't feel. I feel like an angry, stressed out cook just makes poison, really. So we always have music going. We have a group of folks that are all really good friends. We have a very diverse kitchen. We have men and women working. We have people from all over the world working. And it's painted like bright blue. There's nice lighting. It's really important to us that the kitchen be a happy, fun place. Obviously, we get really busy. Friday, Saturday nights will, you know, insanely busy. And I think the friendship and the camaraderie between all the folks that work there really make things run smoothly.
As I get older, it seems like the quality of the food, the taste of the food, very important. But it seems like the quality of the service mm-hmm. seems to matter more to me.
Yeah.
I don't know if becoming an old codger. Yeah.
Totally.
That's across everything.
Not exactly.
Just food. I mean,
everything.
People would just focus. It's one of my biggest pet peeves in the world. Any business or brand that's listening, if you focus on customer service, mm-hmm. you will have loyal customers for life. And that's anyone from a restaurant to Sprint to anyone. It still baffles me to this day when, you know, I'm on the phone or I'm in person and the customer service is just poor and because there's so many options out there. I mean, think of all the restaurants and all of the different types of brands and companies that are out there. People have choices, and you know, it still amazes me when you brought that up. I still don't understand why. Mm-hmm. Why invest in your staff and invest in your customer service, and you'll be better than 90% of the people out there, in my opinion.
I'm glad to know I'm not alone in feeling that way. As I try and put myself in y'all's shoes, though, it's kind of out of your hands. Mm-hmm. I mean, you've got your job. You're running around the kitchen trying to direct the quality of the food. And in your case, Daniel, you're behind closed doors. You don't even see the wait staff and that sort of thing. Yes. How's that relationship? How do you make sure that quality is there, Austin?
Most chefs are rather involved with the wait staff. You know, I mean, especially in terms of, you know, when the food goes out and kind of cracking the whip on getting stuff done, because wait servers have a tendency to kind of stay towards their end of the restaurant and forget about the stuff that needs to go out of the kitchen. And I mean, that's really the part of service that I have a hand in. And to me, I mean, getting your food quickly, hot, you know, ready to eat at the correct time is one of the most important things. Other than that, I mean, communication with your front of the house manager, whoever they may be, is very important, because everyone needs to be friendly. And if you create a friendly environment, good service is going to happen if training is correct.
I think that word, Daniel, that Austin brought up, communication, mm-hmm. that's got to be big.
Communication's key. We also have a really fantastic front of house crew and a really good front of house management. And even from Molly and Marwan, who are the owners, they've actually written out pages on Chai Pani culture and how we are as a restaurant, how we deal with things. We have a word in the Chai Pani family called mind blasting. And mind blasting is sort of what we aim for, that you eat there and your mind gets blasted. but a lot of times what's cool about that is, you know, it happens in restaurants. You have an issue, like a table has an issue. They didn't like something. Maybe something wasn't to their satisfaction. Whatever happened becomes sort of like an opportunity, right? It's a mind blast opportunity. It's an opportunity to come through in a bigger way and provide them with something that blows their mind. Like, an easy way out is like a gift card. But there are other things we can do, like, send them out the same dish, but a bigger portion with like flowers coming out of it. I don't know. That's just a random one. But that step of service, it's like, you know, like when people go out now, wherever it is, they're looking for, especially I feel like in modern society, they're looking for experiences. They want good food, but they also want like the experience of the food. Where did it come from? What's the story behind the food? What's the restaurant about? And so much of that, like you said, is service. And if that experience isn't good, it doesn't matter like really how good the food is. I know places where I love the food, but when I think about going there, I'm like, I don't want to deal with that guy who works at the counter. Like, you know.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, I think, you hit the nail on the head. It is about experiences. Everyone in this day and age is super busy. You know, your weekends feel shorter. Especially if you're a parent, and when you have an opportunity to go out to eat, it's a reprieve. It's you want to go out, and you don't want to go out. And when you get to wherever you're going, you suddenly, you're treated in a way that's like, you know, you're actually inconveniencing them, you know? Mm-hmm. And, you know, I certainly feel like communication is super important. And, you know, I don't know if anyone's ever cracked the code on this, but, you know, if you can get your staff and the people in your business to think as owners, think as an entrepreneur, which I am, that's the biggest key. But little things, it to your point, you know, just handing a gift card and walking away, that's not an answer. It's looking someone in the eye and really making them feel that, okay, I understand. And it's follow up, and it's, you know, not over promising and under delivering, doing the opposite, you know, and so, yeah, I think communication is very important. We live in Decatur. I have a wife and two kids, and we go out to eat a lot, and we're very cognizant of speaking our minds too when things aren't right, because as a business owner, I want that business owner to understand I'm not going up there to complain, but they're a business owner. I know what goes into that. So, you know, I want them to know, look, you know, this was excellent, you know, and a lot of times there isn't a lot of positive feedback. Mm-hmm. People just hear the negative feedback. Yeah. But you should go up and you should thank people and say, hey, you know, your server who had this section that we sat in did an amazing job, you know, or, you know, if it wasn't as amazing as you'd hope, you know, give some feedback. Don't just complain.
Yeah, you know? I have to second that. Like you talk about communication, that really goes to the customer too. Like, you know, if your experience was good or bad or neutral or whatever, like share that, you know, we always want to hear your feedback on things.
Now restaurants, you know, they put comment cards lots of times right there in the check or on the table or something. Do you guys, I want to come back and give my compliments to the chef. Does that happen?
Yeah, that happens. We don't have comment cards, but I make a point to try to make a personal connection to my customers, good, bad, or, you know, whatever. If there's a problem, I'll go talk to them if it's bad enough. And if they seem like they're having a really good time, I'll go talk to them too. But I believe that the most powerful thing in customer retention is a personal connection. Mm-hmm. People like to feel like they're your friends. You know what I mean? They Absolutely. Like to come in, like Cheers, you know?
Yeah.
Exactly. That philosophy is what I think. I think that's a cornerstone of restaurant success.
Yeah, and I would add to that, you know, most of the time when you are upset or someone is upset, they just want someone to look them in the eye and make them feel that they're listening to them. And 9 times out of 10 in those experiences, because I've in the sports and the entertainment marketing business, and we do the Decatur Barbecue Festival. Obviously, it's one of our big events. But 9 times out of 10, when I approach someone that's having an issue, they just want to get something off their chest. Mm-hmm. And usually when they're done doing that and you've sat there and you've listened and you've actually, you know, listened, I mean, you know, looking them in the eye, and, you know, if you can do something for them, great. But most of the time, they just want someone to talk to. And in this day and age of social media, you know, people don't want to speak to anyone. They just want to go on Yelp or go on something to say something. It, you know, I'm probably showing my age, but I think that's a coward way out.
Right.
You know, I just think, I mean, if you have an issue, both positive and negative, it's what we're doing today, right? We're human beings. We're talking to people, right?
Yeah.
You get on the phone or you talk verbally to someone else. I think obviously, you know, with the advent of social media, it's very, very easy to what I call yell from the sidelines.
A couple minutes left here on DeKalb Business Today, the Power Lunch Edition. Mike Voida from the Decatur Barbecue Blues and Bluegrass Festival. I want to ask you, first of all, how long have you been working on this? How many months, I guess, out of the 12 months in the year do you put in kind of building up to Saturday, August 15th?
Yeah, great question. I mean, everyone's like, oh, the event, you know, it's funny. I get emails and phone calls, you know, they pick up this week and next week. And I always laugh because I'm like, do they think that, you know, I just decided to start this next Saturday? But so it's just a side chuckle on my day to day. Basically, what happens is once the festival is over, we have about a month or two of, you know, collecting and doing accounting. We have a grant program, which is funded by the proceeds of the festival. And then we'll have a grant committee meetings, and then we'll actually dispense that money to the groups. I would say right after that, usually January is when I really hit the ground running because, you know, we're looking for corporate sponsors. So any Decatur businesses out there that want to get involved with us in 16, please let us know. And but usually January, February, and even late the previous year, I'm putting together marketing materials, sponsorship things. And then January and February is when we kind of hit the road with that, reaching out to corporations. And we do a lot of recruiting for our music and our bands. So by March 1, our lineup is usually set, which is surprising. But we only have about 6 or 7 slots because we're a one-day event. And I have over 50 to 60 bands that reach out to us every year. And so to answer your question, long-winded form, it's probably a 10 to 11 month preparation for the event. It's probably a month there that, you know, I kind of take off a little bit.
What's the payoff for you? Is the rewarding part cutting a check to a charity? Is the rewarding part showing up on the day of and seeing people having a great time?
Yeah, I think the event business, why I like it and why I've done it for 20 plus years is it's instant feedback. It's probably like these guys. When they have a good night and everything's flowed well and there aren't any people complaining or anything like that, you get instant feedback. So I know pretty instantaneously if everything's going well. Obviously, this is more of a labor of love for me. I'm a resident of Oakhurst. I've always been involved in the neighborhood, and it's an opportunity for me. I'm certainly not going to retire off the festival, but it's a great event and it gives back to the community. But it's also that feeling when it's midday and I see thousands of people out there and they're dancing and they're having fun and they're having a great time and I'm running around, but I can take a quick break and go, all right, this is pretty cool. And it's completely worth it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's a great event. It's a great family event. We have a great kids area. The Hawks and the Braves will be coming by. We've got a lot of great sponsors and interactive areas. And like I said, the 4 B's, beer, barbecue, bluegrass, and blues. So you can't beat it on a Saturday in August indicator.
And that says it all right there. To our chefs, what's the rewarding part for you? As you guys are leaving the restaurant for the night, what makes it a good night? What puts a smile on your face, kind of makes it worth it?
Yeah, I feel like it's twofold. One would be sort of how it went in the kitchen and sort of everyone's mood after the shift and how they're feeling and just how they feel. It really affects how I feel about the night. And then also customer experience. One incident that comes to mind is we had an old Indian man one time, this was in our Asheville location, who called a server over the table, and he was just eating a bowl of dal, which is like the simplest of Indian food, which is boiled lentils with a little spice. And she came over to him, and he looked up at her, and he was crying. And she's like, is everything okay? Like, are you all right? He's like, this tastes exactly like the dal my grandmother used to make, and I haven't tasted this in so many years. And she died when I was young, and on and on and on. And just that, you know, I mean, I'm sorry, I feel bad to like bring up memories of his dead grandma, but that food can connect with someone at that level, can touch someone at that level. When things like that happen, when, you know, Indians come in, they're like, I came to US for college. We used to eat the street food all the time growing up, and I haven't had it since then. And they really feel, you know, they just feel really happy to have all those memories and those tastes come back. That's like a success for me, you know.
Austin?
It's hard to follow such a touching story. But sorry. No. What it comes down to is every chef loves validation, because what you're doing is you're expressing yourself in this art form that encompasses all of the senses. You're putting it out as fast as you can to as many people as you possibly can. And for me, a successful night is when I take a beautiful photo of a special I've made and I get all these likes on social media, and then people come in and they saw it and they order it and I sell out of it in 3 hours and everyone's just raving about it. To me, I go home very happy mm-hmm. when I've been validated in some way. And that might be, you know, that sounds kind of like a bad thing for some reason, but it to me it's like a it's like a culmination of everything I've been working toward, that people love what I do. Which, if you're cooking and you don't care about what people think of your food, that doesn't make any sense. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I measure my success by whether or not I've changed somebody's day or life or year or whatever, mm-hmm. because the food that I put in front of them was so good that they just couldn't be in a bad mood.
Yeah. For people who might be ready to stop into your restaurants for the first time, what's the dish that you guys suggest? You already talked about the Biggie Smalls pizza, yeah. Austin. I waxed poetic about the s'mores dessert pizza, but maybe something that's not on the pizza list.
Well, we make all of our own bread. Our sandwiches are truly fantastic, and the best one that we have is our chicken pesto sandwich. I import our chicken from an all-natural farm in North Carolina, which it's kind of far-reaching, but it's the best chicken farm I can find. So I've imported that chicken in. We make our own pesto with basil and cashews, you know. We do these parsley and garlic roasted tomatoes and fresh goat cheese with arugula on a house-made focaccia bun. It's one of the best sandwiches I've ever had.
Is that part of your job as a chef to research and kind of source out different farms?
Absolutely.
And different vendors? Really? Okay.
Yeah.
How about you?
I would recommend that you come in and as soon as you get there, order an SPDP, which stands for Save Potato Dahi Puri. And that's a kind of unexplainable dish that is just joy.
I will second that.
Yeah.
Anytime I take someone from out of town to Chai Panny, I say we have to start with SPDP. I forget what it stands for, but you just have to get it, and you just pop it in your mouth.
Yeah.
And it's like seven flavors at once.
I love it. And I would, on chef's recommendation, add green chilies on that.
Then
get one of those, then maybe hang out for a bit, have a glass of chai, relax, then get a thali, which is I was talking about, like the meal you get at home on the large plate. Get one of the cocktail specials. And then we have Molly Damon, who's one of our front house managers, who's also a phenomenal pastry chef, who's always coming in with some really special desserts that you can get at Chai Pani pretty much any night of the week. And I would finish off with one of those.
And I didn't ask. Austin said that he has 12 people working in the kitchen with mm-hmm. him. What's your staff like?
Total staff in the kitchen would be about a little over 20 people.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow, that really is controlled chaos. That's a lot of bodies in a small space.
It is.
Well, guys, we really appreciate you being with us. Austin Phillips, the chef at Shorty's Woodfire. You'll find more on them at shortyspizzaatl.com, the location on Lawrenceville Highway there in Tucker. Daniel Peach, the chef de cuisine at Chai Pani, the website chaipanidecatur.com. Of course, they're right there on Ponce in downtown Decatur. And Mike Voida, director of the Decatur Barbecue Blues and Bluegrass Festival. DecaturBBQFestival.com is the website. At Decatur BBQ Festi, FESTI, on Twitter. Guys, it was a fun show. We appreciate you being with us.
Thanks a lot. It was great.
All right, thank you.
All right, that'll do it for this edition of DeKalb Business Today, the Power Lunch Edition. We'll be back here next Friday at 10 a.m. with another panel of business owners, executives, CEOs from around DeKalb County. Until then, for executive producer Jason Becknell, I'm Matt Holmes. We'll see you next time.